It was the summer of 2009, and I had just finished college, a bachelor in business administration, and for all intents and purposes was ready to take on the world, or whatever crap adults like to sell us so we'd comply. Except I wasn't ready to do that yet. My father had a landscaping company passed down to him by his father, and I grew up with the expectation that I would be the next successor of the business. Starting from the age of 10, my father taught me about the job, giving me small tasks to complete. The majority of my school breaks were spent knee-deep in a patch of soil. I didn't mind it most of the time, but my heart wasn't in it. Once graduation came and went, however, my father started getting impatient when I didn't immediately start working on the family business. But for once in my life, I knew what I wanted to do, to take a break and experience the world on my own, something I didn't get to do before. I had my granddad's old Ford Explorer, $2,000 in cash, a backpack with camping gear, and no clear destination in sight. For the first 6 months, I drove across the country, stopping to camp on the most amazing remote locations, meeting new and interesting people, and getting odd jobs here and there as a preemptive measure in case money got tight, or something bad happened. 8 months in, I had crossed thousands of miles, visited around 26 states, and decided it was time to end my road trip. It would take a little over a week to make the way back home to Oregon, but that was on me for not taking proper care of my car throughout the journey. The old broad had died on me many times over the many months I'd been away. I took a detour on the 83 that was supposed to get me to Dupree faster, but ended up getting me pretty lost. As I drove, my eyes were trained on the surroundings, searching for anything that could get me back on track, and that was my second mistake. Out of nowhere, something big crossed in front of my truck, too fast for me to fully dodge it. I felt the impact of the thing hitting the side of the car, just as the momentum caused it to tumble over, pinning the driver's side to the ground. Ah! After getting my bearings, I squeezed through the broken window of the passenger seat to get out. If I had to bet on anything, it would be on my truck being completely unsalvageable. As I finished gathering my backpack and some belongings from inside the car, a guttural screech came from somewhere behind me. The thing that ran in front of the truck, my mind supplied. Weapons-wise, all I had with me was a broken switchblade and a Swiss Army knife, so hopefully the creature wasn't looking for a fight. My prayers were soon answered when I discovered the source of the noise, a badly injured but huge mountain lion tossed on the side of the road, and by the looks of it, he wasn't going to last much longer. So I ventured closer, noticing how the creature's breathing patterns were shallower and slower as the minutes passed by. Upon closer inspection, I noticed some sort of gash wound in one of his paws. Maybe from a fight with another animal? Just as his breathing came to a stop, a ruffle of leaves nearby called my attention. I looked back and saw a dog, hidden behind some bushes, peeking at me. Us. He was big and looked like one of the black and brown police dogs. And then his ears went up, as if he heard something, and immediately disappeared in between the bushes. Whatever. I had bigger worries ahead of me. Wounded, stranded, and alone, there was no other choice than camping for the night. Lucky for me, there was a relatively bare portion of the woods about a quarter of a mile ahead that would be a perfect place to set my tent. I had to work fast, but I got my tent up just as the sun died down on the horizon. I was so exhausted that I didn't even remember falling asleep. I blinked my eyes open however many hours later to the sound of broken twigs right outside my tent. I ignored it at first, still too tired to care. Besides, I was used to camping alone in the middle of nowhere, and knew that there were plenty of noises to be heard in the woods, especially at night. But not even a minute later, the noise happened again, and something about it didn't sit right. Thinking back to the mountain lion and the weird dog, I was immediately very much awake, ears glued to the fabric of the tent, searching for any trace of the sound. There it was again. The movements were slow, circling my campsite, but getting closer and closer to the center. Did animals walk around in circles like that? It felt too deliberate to be an animal, Still, I kept paying attention to the noises, the idea of sleep long gone. I was certain they were footsteps, heavy ones too, way too heavy for a mere mountain lion or dog. Oh, it's gotta be a bear, I thought. I touched the darkness around me until I found my switchblade and clutched it in my hand. What I didn't expect was to hear a man's voice outside my tent. "Are you the owner of that pickup truck? Are you hurt?" Immediately, I felt relieved, putting the blade away inside my pocket. If this man got here, he probably had a car. I could get a ride with him to the nearest bus station and head back home. I got out of the tent and was immediately blinded by the man's bright flashlight aimed at me. His body was merely a large outline in the dark. "Are you hurt, son?" "No, sir," I said, trying to shield my eyes with my forearm. "It was a close call, but I got out unharmed."
"Can't have that now, can we?"
"What?" I realized what was happening 2 seconds too late, as something lunged at me, sinking sharp teeth on my ankle and twisting it around. The pain was so intense, I immediately fell to the ground as the thing chewed on my flesh. It was the dog from before. The man whistled and the dog immediately let go, running to his side.
"Enough, bear," he said,
roughly patting the dog's head after offering a treat taken from his pocket.
"Now, son, here's how things are gonna work. You made a mess of my kill earlier today. Now I have nothing to hunt, and bear has nothing to eat."
"What? Did you want money? Is that it? It's in the tent, man. You can..."
"You aren't listening to me, boy. I don't want your damn money."
"What do you want?" The noise of his shotgun cocking echoed in the dark of the forest, answering my question. With a wicked smile, he told me he would count until 100, and after that it was game on, the game being him hunting me. The man started counting, and I found myself backing away from him and the dog. I didn't know where to go or what to do. I could barely even see anything in front of me, and was probably leaving a trail of blood behind me too. Not that it mattered anyway. He had a source of light when I had none. All the odds were stacked against me. Hiding wasn't an option in the long run, but I couldn't keep walking much further either. Between the throbbing pain from my injured leg and my rapidly dying resolve, panic clawed at my insides. This crazy man was going to kill me. The countdown came to an end, and I still had no idea what to do. Would he come after me himself, or would he send the dog to do his dirty work? Either way, I was dead. From afar, I heard him psyching the dog up, urging him to find me.
"Bear, are you hungry, boy? Go, go!"
I summoned all the strength I had left and kept walking. Masking my scent wasn't a possibility, especially if he had been trained to aid hunts, so my only chance was to tire him out. Easier said than done, of course, since I was the injured party. I kept walking, one foot after the other, a mix of limping and running, suddenly realizing I had been slowly and steadily going up an incline. But soon enough, there was no more ground to cover. I was faced with a steep hill in front of me, and Bear behind me. He barked angrily at me, and the shock made me stumble back, falling to the ground. The dog slowly approached me, so I took the blade from my pocket, ready to do whatever it took to survive. Looking at him up close, it was evident that he had been starved. He was still big, but most of the bulk came from his long pelt, not by any actual weight. The switchblade trembled in my hand as I pointed it at the dog. As much as I wanted to defend myself, I couldn't find the strength to actually do it. Bear was as much of a victim as I was. Damn, I can't kill him. Resigned to my fate, I dropped the switchblade and closed my eyes, not wanting to see the attack coming. I heard Bear snarling and felt a strong gust of wind beside me when he lunged at something else. By a sheer miracle, a tiny rabbit hiding in a bush behind me called his attention, and urged by hunger, he chose to attack it instead. He was completely engrossed in eating, and that would be my only chance to lure the man closer. I let out a loud, pained screech, hoping to goad him into thinking Bear had me, and it worked like a charm. I could hear him coming up the incline, panting and clearly exhausted by it.
loudly congratulating the dog for his efforts. So I pulled out the switchblade again, hid behind a thick tree near where Bear was, and waited for him to approach. "You got him good, didn't you, boy?" As soon as his body passed by the tree, I jammed the sharp blade on the back of his heel and then pulled back, completely slicing the tendon. The man went down screaming bloody murder, gripping the wound. Surprise, or maybe pain, made him let go of the shotgun for just as long as it took me to grab it from him. Immediately pointed at his face, resolute in shooting the man point blank. "Hey, kid. We don't have to do that, okay?" he pleaded, lifting both hands at me in surrender. There's money in the car, down the road." "I don't want your money. Wasn't that what you said to me?" I cocked the gun, mimicking his move, ready to shoot him. But another idea came to mind. Before he knew what was happening, I sliced him deep in the side of the stomach and took the small pouch of treats he had inside his pocket. By that time, Bear was done with his appetizer. I threw a treat at him to call his attention. He quickly found it and ate it with gusto. Then I shoved a few of them inside the open wound of the man's stomach, as he screamed and thrashed in agony. "Are you hungry, boy?" I asked, before tossing treats beside the man as a trail. And Bear quickly followed. I wasn't that much of a sadist to stick around, but as I walked away, all I could hear were the man's desperate screams echoing through the woods. Yeah. I was done with camping for good. Maybe landscaping wasn't that bad after all.
I'm a mystery novelist. I won't tell you my name, but you've probably heard of me before, as I'm relatively famous. I live alone in Denver, and whenever I finish a manuscript, I take a camping trip by myself. It's how I recharge my batteries and let my brain relax. I love the outdoors, and I never felt nervous being in the woods by myself. Until last month, when everything changed. I had just finished a particularly difficult book. It had taken me several extra months to finish all the rewrites, and I was mentally exhausted. I emailed everything to my publisher and then drove off to the state park. I checked in at the ranger station, and then headed off to my favorite area of the park. It was a beautiful little clearing with a stream cutting across. I'd booked the area in advance, but when I got there, I saw that a tent was already set up. Someone had stolen my camping spot. I would have pitched my tent somewhere else, but then I'd be stealing someone else's spot, and I didn't want to do that. So I decided to go to the tent and politely ask the other campers to leave. "Hello?" I called out. No one answered. I assumed that whoever was using the tent had wandered off somewhere. Just in case, I unzipped the front to look inside. I almost threw up. There was a dead body in the tent. A woman. Her head had been bashed in with a rock or some other heavy object. The blood was still wet. Meaning that she had just been murdered. I stepped backward, my heart racing. I knew that I didn't have cell phone service here, so I had to run back to the ranger station before the killer came back. But as I went backing away, I bumped into somebody standing behind me. I spun around and saw an extremely handsome man in a black jumpsuit. He smiled at me. "Sorry. It looks like I stole your camping spot." "Who are you?" He laughed. "I don't have a name." He didn't move. He just stood there casually, as if he was surprised at my horrified reaction. I ran past him, barreling down the trail until I reached the ranger station. I raced inside, but no one was there. I grabbed the phone at the desk and dialed 911. Nothing happened. I looked down. It was an old phone, and the cord had been cut. The door opened behind me, and the man walked inside, smiling. "I don't think that's gonna work." I ran around the ranger's desk so there was something in between us. Then I grabbed a litter opener and held it in front of me. The thing was small, but sharp. If this man was gonna attack me, I'd fight. "Don't worry, he said. I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to talk. He was smiling. He stepped closer. Filled with panic, I ran to the door behind me, slammed it closed and locked it. But it was in the ranger's private room, which had a small cot and an old TV. I looked around for another phone, but there wasn't one. The man knocked on the door. Please, I just want to tell my story. You're a writer, right? I gulped. How did he even know? I had an eventful day, obviously. Just let me in, and I'll tell you all about it. Maybe you can use my story for your next book. He knocked again. I kept searching around the room. There had to be something in here I could use. Maybe a radio? There was a cabinet in the corner of the room. I flung it open to look inside. It didn't have a radio, though. What it had was it had another dead body. The ranger was pale and limp, a pocket knife sticking out of his eye. The body slid out of the cabinet and flopped onto the floor. On the other side of the door, the man said, Oh, I can see you found victim number two. Now will you listen to my story? Leave me alone, I screamed. I thought writers were supposed to be inquisitive. No amount of curiosity would get me to listen to this psycho. All I cared about was finding a way to get out of here before he killed me too. There was a single window in the back of the room. It was small, but I knew I could still crawl out of it. I just had to do it quietly. Everything was silent for a long moment. I didn't know if the killer was still waiting outside the door. Okay, I said. I have a pen and paper. Tell me who you are and why you killed these people. The man laughed. Yeah, he was still behind the door. I won't tell you my name for obvious reasons, but I'll tell you what I did. As long as you promise to write about it in your next book. I promise. Good. Slowly, he started to tell me about the woman he found in the tent. Said her name was Rachel. He kept talking, but I didn't listen to his words. I was too busy trying to open the window without him hearing me. Eventually, I pushed the window all the way open and climbed onto the edge. Are you still listening? Yes, I told him, but I was already half through. Keep going. He continued talking as I pulled my body all the way through. The ground was about 4 feet below me, so I lowered myself as far as I could and landed on my forearms. Wasted no time, I jumped up and ran towards the parking lot. I raced to my car and turned on the ignition. The man stepped out of the ranger station, but he didn't come after me. He just watched as I drove away, smiling the whole time. I drove straight to the police station and reported what happened. But when the cops came to check everything out, the man was gone. So were the two bodies. I gave them a full description of the killer, but they still haven't found him. My camping trip was cut short, so I went back home. As soon as I stepped on my porch, I felt safe again. But then, I saw a small note taped to my front door. It read, You didn't hear my whole story, but don't worry, I'll tell you later.
Last summer, my boyfriend Miguel and I planned our very first camping trip as a couple. I was a lot more outdoorsy than him, so I was a little surprised when he suggested the trip. I was even more surprised when he bought all this expensive camping equipment for us to use. He seemed really excited about it. Everything was all set for the trip, but on the morning we were supposed to leave, we got into a really big argument. Miguel was upset that I had lunch with my ex-boyfriend, Jacob. I didn't think it was a big deal because Jacob and I had dated a decade ago, and we'd both moved on to other relationships. He forced me to promise never to see Jacob again. I told him he was overreacting. Things spiraled from there, and I ended up storming off. In a fit of anger, I decided to go on the trip by myself. I took all of our camping stuff and left. Miguel kept calling me over and over, but I refused to answer. I listened to his messages, and none of them were apologies. Instead, he kept begging me to come back. He made up some excuse that Jacob was dangerous.
but I knew that he was only trying to justify himself. Eventually, I got to the campgrounds, unloaded my stuff, and pitched my tent. As I sat there alone, I started to have regrets. Even though I knew Miguel was being pig-headed, I still missed him. Deep down, I didn't want to camp alone. As I set up a campfire, I saw that Miguel had left one more voice message. I listened to it. Miguel finally apologized for shouting at me. He said that he was going to drive over and meet me in the campgrounds, but his tires were slashed. He wasn't sure, but he thought that Jacob had done it. He said he was worried for my safety and begged me to come home. For the first time, I felt scared. I didn't think my ex would do something like that, but Miguel sounded so serious. And if Jacob hadn't slashed his tires, then who did? The woods were really dark and quiet. I couldn't stay here anymore. I put out the fire and started packing up all my stuff. Just as I disassembled my tent, someone walked out of the darkness. It was Jacob. "What are you doing here?" I asked. He said that he was here to protect me. I didn't trust him. I knew he slashed my boyfriend's tires. He stepped forward, reaching his hands out. He acted like he wanted to comfort me. Without thinking, I punched him in the face and ran off. I left all my stuff behind. I could hear his footsteps as he ran after me, so I sped up. I ran so fast through the dark forest that I got hopelessly lost. I thought I was running back to the parking lot, but I ended up all turned around. Behind me, Jacob kept screaming for me to stop. I couldn't see him, but I knew that he was close. I had to keep going. Somehow, I made it back to the parking lot. As soon as I saw my car, I felt relief wash over me. I ran to the door and reached into my pocket for the keys, but I didn't have them. I'd left them back at the campsite. By then, Jacob had reached me. His expression was blank. "What do you want?" I screamed. Before he could explain, another car pulled into the parking lot. I didn't recognize the car, but I recognized the person in the driver's seat. It was Miguel. "Get in!" he shouted. While Jacob screamed for me to stop, I raced around the car and got inside. Even though I was trembling, I buckled my seatbelt and we drove off. Jacob frantically waved at us from the parking lot, but I couldn't hear what he was saying. We drove in silence for a long time. I noticed that the car was filled with empty fast food bags and there was a car seat in the back. Clearly, this wasn't a rental. Had Miguel stolen it in his hurry to rescue me? "What's going on?" I finally asked him. He kept his eyes on the road.
"Jacob was right," he muttered. "He was trying to protect you."
Miguel explained that he had planned to kill me during our camping trip and make it seem like an accident. Somehow, Jacob had found out and tried to stop him.
"You should have listened to him."
"But why?"
I asked.
"I thought we were happy."
He didn't answer. I reached for the door handle, ready to jump out of the car, but Miguel sped up. He was barreling through the forest road, and if I jumped out, I'd probably die. I was trapped. Headlights shined behind us. A truck was following us, getting closer and closer. Miguel sped up even more. I looked through the back window. I wasn't sure, but it looked like Jacob was in the truck. He was still trying to save me.
"He just won't stop, will he?"
The truck was insanely fast. It got right behind us. Jacob honked the horn.
"Pull over,"
I told Miguel. That just made him drive even faster. My whole body shook as the truck rammed into us. Miguel gripped the steering wheel tightly, but he was losing control. Our car started to careen off the road. We were about to crash into a tree. In the split second that it took to skid off the road, I reached toward Miguel's side and pressed his seatbelt button, releasing it. Then we crashed. My seatbelt held me in place and the airbag slammed into me. Pain shot through my whole body. I think my ribs were broken. When I pushed the airbag away, I didn't see Miguel in the driver's seat. Without his seatbelt to protect him, his body had flown through the windshield and smacked against the tree. I could see his bloody, twisted body through the broken windshield. He was dead. Jacob appeared at the window next to me. He struggled to open the door and pull me out of the wreckage.
"Thank you,"
I muttered, and then I passed out from the pain. To this day, I still don't know why Miguel wanted to kill me. I guess I'll never know. Jacob and I are still friends. I owe him my life.
We're not dating yet, but there's a definite connection between us. He's a good guy, but after Miguel, I'm still not ready to trust anyone.
Natalie and I had been dating for 3 years before we finally broke up. I guess it was a long time coming. We'd been fighting over a lot of stupid stuff. Natalie was annoyed that I never took anything seriously. I was annoyed that she spent all her time at the gym, doing yoga and stuff. I felt like she didn't value our time together. Neither one of us was to blame. It was just a case of irreconcilable differences. I was heartbroken, of course. I really did love her. After she moved out to live with her sister, I became a bit of a recluse. I stopped going out to all my favorite places because I worried that I'd run into her. I stopped seeing our mutual friends. I just threw myself into my job. One day, I had a mini panic attack in my house, and I knew that I needed to go out and calm myself down. I hadn't eaten fast food in weeks, so I decided to walk over to the Chick-fil-A just a few streets over. I'd like to say that I chose the restaurant because I was in the mood for chicken, but the truth is, I chose it because I knew that Natalie wouldn't be there. Natalie was always a bit of a health nut. She refused to eat at any fast food place unless she was really stressed, which almost never happened. I figured it would be the one place where I wouldn't run into her. I was wrong. When I got to the restaurant, I saw Natalie sitting in the corner. Maybe she was stressed after all. Maybe our breakup was hitting her as hard as it was me. Or maybe she was just in the mood for chicken. For a second, I thought I could just turn around and leave. But she noticed me right away. She smiled awkwardly and I waved back. I went up to the front counter to order, and while I was waiting, I felt obligated to walk over and talk to Natalie. I didn't sit down, though. I asked her how she was doing, and she said that she was okay. She asked about my job. Neither of us revealed too much information about how we were doing. I really didn't want her to find out how much I missed her. The lady called me over to get my food, and I thanked God that my conversation with Natalie was over. I went to pick up my tray, when the door swung open and a man ran into the restaurant. He was about my age, but I could tell by his eyes that he was high on some kind of thing. His hands were trembling. He stumbled forward, looked straight at me, and screamed, "You! You're dead!" I'd never seen this man before in my life. Obviously, he'd totally lost it. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a switchblade. He pointed it at me and kept repeating that I was dead. I stumbled backward, hiding behind one of the tables. He just kept walking closer. "Please," I said. "I'm not who you think I am." But he wouldn't listen. The man froze for a second, and I thought he was finally coming to his senses, but then he laughed and dove at me. He jumped onto the table I was hiding behind and slid his body across the flat surface. I tried to get out of the way, but he grabbed me by the front of my shirt and pulled me toward him. He raised the switchblade, ready to slash at me. He was still laughing. Before he could cut me, though, something got in his way. Natalie! She jumped at the man and knocked the knife out of his hand. All those hours at the gym had really paid off. She was way stronger than I was. The knife flew across the air and clattered onto the floor. But that man wouldn't stop. He kicked Natalie off him and then grabbed me again. He didn't have his weapon anymore, but that didn't stop him from holding my neck and squeezing until I couldn't breathe. "Please!" I choked out. "Shut up!" he screamed in my face. "After everything you did, you don't deserve to live!" What was he talking about? The things he was ingesting must have made him extremely delusional. I turned toward Natalie. I couldn't say anything, so I just pleaded with my eyes. She had to help me. Natalie looked at me for a second, and then she glanced at the exit. Instantly, she spun around and ran outside. I couldn't believe it. My girlfriend of 3 years, the woman I thought I loved, was abandoning me? I couldn't breathe. I was going to die, and Natalie just left? "Hold still," the crazy man shouted. He squeezed harder. I could hear the cashier shouting at him to stop. Why wasn't she calling the police? My vision got blurry. I was seconds away from passing out when I heard the door open again. I was too woozy to see what was happening. But the man let go of my neck and I collapsed onto the floor. It took me a few seconds to catch my breath again. I forced myself to look up and I saw Natalie standing at the front door.
She was holding onto a man who looked a lot like me. He was tall and chubby, just like me. Same hair, same glasses. Even our outfits were similar. The man tried to run away, but Natalie held him tight. Natalie was about half his size, but she would not let go. God, I loved her so much. The crazy man walked toward them. "Leave my boyfriend alone," Natalie said. "You got the wrong person." I couldn't believe it. The man wasn't high after all. He'd just mistaken me for someone else. The man who looked like me started to whimper. "I'm so sorry," he said. Don't kill me." "You know I have to," the crazy man responded. It looked like the fight was going to restart, but thankfully a police car pulled into the parking lot. Two cops came out and asked what was going on. Natalie explained the situation as simply as she could, and the cops took both of the men away. I never found out what had caused the anger between them. It's probably best that I didn't know. Natalie ran toward me and asked me if I was okay. "I am," I told her. "Thanks to you." "I saw that man hiding in the parking lot," she explained. "And he looked just like you. I figured that there was some sort of mix-up. I hope you didn't think I abandoned you." "No," I lied. "You probably won't be surprised to learn that Natalie and I got back together after that. The petty arguments we used to have just seemed so unimportant after my attack. We spend a lot more time together, and I even started joining her when she goes to the gym. I've already lost 15 pounds. We're better than ever, and nothing is going to come between us again."